particular photo after she took her sleeping pill, because sometimes it made her dream of him. She was 31 in the photo, but she looked much younger. She always had, until recently. When she looked in the mirror these days, she saw someone she didn't recognize. She didn't see the beautiful woman in the photo. She saw an old woman, trying to be beautiful, her skin dry and her wrinkles like cracks. She looked like a very well-dressed winter apple. Long ago, when she was a young woman, younger even than in the photo, she thought she would be happier here in Bald Slope than she was in Asheville. It meant she would be away from her family and their demands of her. She was only 23 when she married Marco, a match made by her father. Marco was almost 24 years her senior, but he was rich and charismatic, and he had no interest in having children, so it could have been much, much worse. She got what she wanted, a life away from her family and no younger siblings to look after anymore, while her family got what they wanted, money. But Margaret didn't realize how lonely she would be in this strange, cool place with the Gothic arches of its downtown buildings and an entire culture devoted to bringing visitors to their town in order to survive. And it didn't take long to understand that Marco only wanted a beautiful wife and the cachet of her old southern family name. He didn't want her. But when she was 31, for one brief, wonderful year, she wasn't lonely. She was happy, for the first and only time she could ever remember. The photo had been taken at a picnic social, and he wasn't supposed to be in the picture. He was caught by accident so close to her. She'd cut the photo in half years ago, when she thought cutting him out of her life was the right thing to do. But she could still see his hand in the photo, a young man's hand, just barely touching hers. The hand wasn't her husband's. She could hear Josie moving around in her room. Josie was talking to herself, which was a new development, one Margaret wondered if she should be concerned about. Today Josie had taken entirely too long to fetch the peppermint oil, especially considering Nova Berry didn't even have it ready yet. Josie had been doing something else. The thought of Josie making a wider circle, one outside this house, made Margaret feel uneasy. Margaret had given up everything for this life, for this house, for this money. Josie would, too. She heard some scuffling, like something being dragged across the floor in Josie's room. "Josie?" she called, putting the photo under her pillow. A minute passed with no response. "Josie!" she called again. Soon Josie tapped on Margaret's bedroom door and entered. Margaret knew she wasn't a good mother. But somehow, all the horrible things Josie did when she was young, all the treasures she broke, all the tantrums she threw, all the scratches and bruises she gave, would have been a little easier to forgive if she just didn't look so much like Marco. Marco, who would swoop in once a week to take Josie on a drive because Margaret forced him to. Where was he the rest of the time, when Josie was screaming or breaking the good china? The first 9 years of Josie's life, Margaret could only stare at her daughter, at what an unattractive, spoiled child she was, and wonder if she was punishment. She'd had Josie out of desperation and spite. So maybe Margaret got what she deserved. But Marco could do what he wanted, married or not, and he had no consequences to face. Men were thieves. "Is something wrong, Mother? Do you need something?" "What are you doing in your room? I heard a scraping sound." "I was sitting at my desk," Josie said. "I pulled back the chair. I'll go to bed now. I won't make any more noise." "All right," Margaret said. Josie started to turn. "Josie."
"Yes, Mother."
"Did you get rid of that sweater like I asked?"
"Yes, Mother."
"I wasn't trying to be mean the other day. It just doesn't look good on you."
"Yes, Mother," Josie said.
The truth was, That sweater, that color, looked good on her daughter. And every time she wore it, it hinted at something that scared Margaret. Josie was growing into her beauty. Margaret watched Josie leave. She used to be a beautiful woman, the most beautiful woman around. She brought out the photo again, but that was forever ago. Chapter 3 Rock Candy. Across town, early the next morning, Chloe Finley stared at the door of her apartment. Her boyfriend, Jake, was on the other side of the door, outside in the hall. She couldn't believe this was happening. She'd just kicked Jake out after he'd admitted he'd cheated on her. Dazed, she turned around and tripped over a book on the floor. She looked down at it and sighed. She'd half expected this. Whether she liked it or not, books always appeared when she needed them. She'd stopped reading as much once she met Jake. And over the past 5 years, ever since moving in with him, books had come to her less and less frequently. When they did show up, she ignored them. After all, how did you explain such a thing, books appearing all of a sudden? She was always afraid Jake would think she was crazy. She could remember very clearly the first time it happened to her. Being an only child raised by her great-grandparents on a farm miles from town, she was bored a lot. When she ran out of books to read, it only got worse. She was walking by the creek along the wood line at the end of the property one day when she was 12, feeling mopey and frustrated, when she saw a book propped up against a willow tree. She walked over and picked it up. It was so new the spine creaked and popped when she opened it. It was a book on card tricks, full of fun things she could do with the deck of cards her great-grandmother kept in a drawer in the kitchen for her weekly canasta game. She called out, asking if anyone was there. No one answered. She didn't see any harm in looking through the book, so she sat under the tree by the creek and read as much as she could before it got dark. She wanted to take it with her when her great-grandmother called her home, but she knew she couldn't. The owner of the book would surely want it back. So she reluctantly left it by the tree and ran home, trying to commit to memory everything she'd read. After dinner, Chloe took the deck of cards out of the kitchen drawer and went to her bedroom to try some of the tricks. She tried for a while, but she couldn't get them right without following the pictures in the book. She sighed and gathered the cards she'd spread out on the floor. She stood, and that's when she saw the book, the same book she'd left by the creek on her nightstand. For a while after that, she thought her great-grandparents were surprising her with books. She'd find them on her bed, in her closet, in her favorite hideouts around the property. And they were always books she needed, books on games or novels of adventure when she was bored, books about growing up as she got older. But when her great-grandparents confronted her about all the books she had and where did she get the money to buy them, she realized they weren't the ones doing it. The next day, under her pillow, she found a book on clever storage solutions. It was exactly what she needed, something to show her how to hide her books. She accepted it from then on. Books liked her. Books wanted to look after her. She slowly picked the book up from the apartment floor. It was titled Finding Forgiveness. She stared at it a long time, a feeling bubbling inside her. It took a few moments for her to realize it was anger. Books were good for a story or to teach a card trick or two, but what were they, really? Just paper and string and glue. They evoked emotions, and that was why people felt a connection with them. But they had no emotions themselves. They didn't know betrayal. They didn't know hurt. What in the hell did they know about forgiveness? She went to the kitchen, put the book in the refrigerator, and shut the door. She slid her back down the door and sat on the floor. Jake had woken her up that morning by kissing his way down her stomach. She could feel her lower abdominal muscles clench at the memory, even though she was furious with him now, livid. But she could never seem to help her physical reaction when it came to Jake. She was sometimes frightened by how much she felt for him, frightened by his intensity, by the way he never closed his eyes when they made love. He pulled her to him the way wind pulled leaves, like she had no control. She'd never loved anyone as much or felt such passion. To this day, she could make tap water boil just by kissing him. And she thought Jake was just as consumed by her. The day they met at the courthouse, on his first day of work out of law school, he forgot where he was going and sat at her shop staring at her until the district attorney herself came to look for him. As he had moved over her that morning, she'd met his eyes and felt that rush of overwhelming feeling, her body panicking with it. It was almost too much, yet she could never imagine being without it. "I would die before I could ever be with anyone else," she'd said, reaching up to touch his face. His eyes bored into hers just as his body did. "I would die before I" was a game they played, one of those things couples did, an inside joke. If they were in a restaurant, one of them might say, "I would die before I would ever eat that much again," and the other would say, "I would die before I let you." Or if they were out walking through the park, one of them might laugh and say, "I would die before I would ever make a dog of mine wear a bandana." And the other would say, "I would die before I let you." But it was always serious in bed. "I would die before I would leave you. I would die before I could ever get enough of this." Jake had suddenly closed his eyes, which he never did when they made love. He stopped and fell away from her, and that's when he told her. There was only her. "There's only you, Chloe." He made a mistake. He hadn't meant for it to happen. It was just one time, he'd said, 3 months ago. The office had been celebrating after winning the Beasley murder case. Everyone had committed so much time to it, and there had been all this stress, all these emotions needing a release, and before he knew it, he'd done it. He loved Chloe, not the other woman. He begged her forgiveness, telling her he'd do anything to make this right. Anything, it seemed, but tell her the name of the woman he'd slept with. Chloe sat on the floor in front of the refrigerator and stared into space until the phone rang. The voice that came over the machine was Hank's, one of the security guards at the courthouse, wondering where she was. She got up, got dressed, and went to the door. The book was sitting on the console by the door. She frowned at it as she left. It was on the passenger seat of her car when she got in. It was lying on the counter by the cash register when she lifted the security gate to the shop. Downtown was busy that afternoon. Josie had forgotten that preparations had begun for the 3-day Bald is Beautiful festival, which was held every year to kick off the ski season. There was always live music and beer to attract college kids, and a famous bald head contest the first night that received a lot of media attention. The festival had been Marco's idea. Josie used to go to the festival with him when she was young, but it had been almost 20 years since she'd last attended. After Marco died, the town invited Margaret and Josie to the festival as guests of honor, but Margaret always refused, and the invitations eventually stopped. They were poor substitutes for the charismatic man who had once ruled the mountain anyway. Because of the preparations, it took Josie longer than she thought it would to get to the courthouse downtown and find a place to park. She finally found a parking space big enough for Lola, the large Cadillac. Then, when she entered the courthouse, she set off the metal detector twice. When the security guards finally waved her on, she walked across the cavernous pink marble rotunda that smelled of grease from the old elevators and went to the small shop Della Lee had told her about. It looked like a newsstand from a distance, with shelves of magazines and newspapers and paperback books, but as she got closer, she noticed there was a sandwich counter and 2 small cafe tables. There wasn't anyone there when she approached. She looked around and checked her watch anxiously. Suddenly she heard from the back room behind the counter, "Would you please go away? I don't need you." "Excuse me?" Josie said, surprised. A young woman with the most beautiful hair Josie had ever seen popped her head out of the doorway.
"Oh, I'm sorry," she said as she walked all the way out of the room. "I didn't know anyone was out here. Can I help you?"
Her color was high, and her brown eyes were shining. Her gorgeous red hair was a thick mass of curls that fell down her back. She looked like a painting, fragile, caught in a moment she couldn't get out of. "Are you all right?" Josie automatically asked. The woman's smile didn't quite meet her eyes.
"I'm fine, thanks. What can I get for you?"
"A grilled tomato and cheese sandwich to go, please."
"Coming up,"
the woman said, and turned around to the grill. Josie sat at one of the small cafe tables. She kept checking her watch. She had just sneaked out of her mother's ladies' club meeting. She had about 20 minutes by her estimation, 20 minutes to get back to Mrs. Herzog's drawing room before the meeting ended. Josie wasn't a member of the group, and she always stood off to the side with the nurses and paid companions of some of the older ladies. Not even they paid any attention when she slipped out. The only person who seemed to notice was Raleigh Pelham, the older man who owned the local cab company. Some mysterious part of the Pelham family tree forbade them from breaking promises. Once a Pelham gave you his word, he had to keep it. If Raleigh promised he'd pick you up at 10 o'clock, he was always there at 10 o'clock. Annabel Drake hired him to take her to these meetings, and he always waited outside and stared at the house as if the gathering of women inside was a mystery he was trying to solve. He smiled at Josie as he leaned against his cab, his collar up against the cold wind. She knew he wouldn't say anything. For some reason, he went out of his way to avoid speaking to her mother. Sneaking out was another risk, yes, but someone had to take care of Della Lee. As far as Josie knew, she hadn't eaten anything since she'd shown up 3 days ago, stubbornly holding out for a grilled tomato and cheese sandwich. Josie checked her watch again, and she suddenly felt a pull in the center of her body. She put a hand to her stomach automatically, thinking it was hunger. The smell of peppery warm cheese and thick, yeasty grilled bread was beginning to fill the air. She would give the sandwich to Della Lee when she got home, and while Della Lee ate the sandwich, Josie would eat oatmeal pies and candy corn and packets of salty pumpkin seeds from her closet. She daydreamed about that for a moment. She heard the metal detector go off and turned. That's when she realized it wasn't hunger she felt. It was Adam. He was emptying his pockets before walking through the metal detector again. He was still in his work uniform, but he wasn't carrying his bag. He had on a well-worn blue fleece hoodie, and a bandana was pushing his hair back. Her lips parted when he began to walk across the rotunda toward her. But he didn't even look at her as he went straight to the counter. "Chloe?" The woman turned from the grill, saw who it was, then turned back around without a word. "Come on, Chloe. Talk to me. I just got home from work and found him on my front step."
"I don't care," Chloe said.
Adam stared at Chloe's back, at her beautiful hair. "He never meant to hurt you." That made Chloe turn again, spatula in hand.
"You knew about it?"
Adam hesitated. Whatever it was, he knew. Chloe turned back around.
"Just go."
"Do you want me to tell him anything?"
"I'm not talking to him, and I'm not talking to him through you."
She looked over her shoulder.
"Unless, of course, you want to tell me who it was."
"I don't know who it was," Adam said. "Listen, he asked me to go over to your place and get some of his things because he knows you don't want him there right now. But I'll wait until you're there to do that, okay? I'll call you tonight before I come by. Jake will be staying with me for a while. You know the number." He waited for her to say something, but when she didn't, he finally turned and walked away. He glanced at Josie as he passed her. He'd taken a few steps before he stopped. "Josie," he said, as if the glimmer of recognition finally penetrated. "What a surprise."
"Hi, Adam,"
she said breathlessly. "What are you doing here?"
"I'm waiting on a sandwich." she quickly added. It's not for me.
It's not for me? Brilliant.
Oh, right, of course.
He studied her for a moment. Her hand went covertly to her mouth to feel for crumbs.
Are you okay?
You ask me that a lot.
Do I? I'm sorry. You just seem a little sad.
She shook her head. I'm fine, she lied.
He looked over to Chloe, then turned back to Josie. Well, I'll see you later. She watched him go.
Bye.
Here's your sandwich, Chloe said, putting a white paper bag on the counter. Josie stood and approached the counter as Chloe punched some buttons on the cash register.
So, you know Adam? Josie asked, as casually as possible.
He's my boyfriend, my ex-boyfriend's. Chloe shook her head and looked frustrated that she couldn't articulate just what Adam was to her, which made Josie's heart sink even lower in her chest. They had history. They had a relationship.
He's my boyfriend's best friend, she finally said. It's $4 even.
Oh. Josie dug around in her purse a little too long, working up enough courage to ask, Do you mean you and Adam aren't a couple?
No,
Chloe said, as if surprised Josie would think that.
How do you know him?
Josie finally brought out the money and handed it to Chloe. He delivers my mail. Chloe took the money, now staring at Josie.
Do I know you from somewhere?
I don't think so.
Chloe suddenly smiled. Oh, I know. You're Serini, Josie Serini. There's a portrait of you and your father in the lobby of the ski lodge. I see it every time I go there.
Josie hadn't thought about that portrait in a long time. Her mother had insisted on having it commissioned and had been vehement about it hanging in the lobby for everyone to see. It had immortalized her as a fat child, but Josie had loved sitting on her father's lap for hours while having it done.
I'd almost forgotten about that. I didn't know it still hung there.
You know, now that I think about it, Adam did once mention he delivered the Serini's mail.
He did?
But he never said he knew you.
Embarrassed, Josie picked up the warm white bag.
He doesn't, she said, and turned to leave. She knocked a book she didn't know was there off the counter. She picked it up and looked at the cover. Finding Forgiveness.
I'm sorry, is this your book?
Unfortunately, Chloe took the book. As Josie walked away, Chloe went to the back room, saying,
I said, go away! And then Adam walked in. I couldn't believe it. Apparently Chloe's boyfriend is his best friend, and he's staying with him now. I think she and her boyfriend lived together, and she kicked him out.
Josie was sitting on the floor in front of the closet, talking with animation. The white bag with the sandwich in it, long since cool, because Josie had to leave it in the trunk of the car until she could sneak out and get it without her mother seeing, was sitting on her lap. While Josie was out, Della Lee had obviously occupied herself by playing with the things Josie had brought from her house. She was wearing a child-sized tiara and all the old necklaces from the box, and had put a rhinestone-studded denim shirt over her T-shirt. She'd gone slap-happy with her makeup. Her lips were bright, glossy pink, and her fingernails were each painted a different color.
"Who is Adam?" Della Lee asked, blowing on her fingernails.
"He's my mailman."
"Aha!" Della Lee looked up with a triumphant smile. "He was the reason you ran out of here so quickly the other day."
Josie felt like she'd been caught with a mouthful of jelly beans. But Della Lee didn't seem to feel like making her squirm that day.
I always worried about Chloe being so wrapped up in Jake. She never got to know herself.
You and me and Chloe, Della Lee said, flopping onto her back on the sleeping bag and pillow Josie had given her. She held her hands above her face to admire her fingernails. We can't hold on to our hearts to save our lives. You even let yours go off in some man's mailbag.
You know these people? Josie asked.
Not personally. Della Lee dropped her hands and stared up at Josie's clothes. But I know Chloe is a good kid. She's 25, I think. I remember I was 10 when you were born and 12 when she was born.
Josie looked at her oddly.
You remember when I was born?
Of course.
I bet most people in town do. You were Marco Cerini's beloved only child.
Oh.
Della Lee hadn't made a move for the bag, so Josie proudly put it on the floor in front of her. Long story short, here's your sandwich.
Della Lee turned her head to look at the bag.
I ate some things from your closet while you were out. She lifted a corner of the sleeping bag to reveal some empty candy wrappers. I didn't think you'd really do it. Oh, I mean, I appreciate it. You're being very nice to me in my time of need. But I already ate. That's what you wanted, right? You eat the sandwich. You know you want to. Get me another one tomorrow.
Josie eyed the bag. That would be selfish, wouldn't it?
She admitted that she wanted the sandwich, but she'd gotten it for Della Lee. That wasn't the same as getting it for herself. She couldn't eat it, could she?
Are you sure?
Positive, Della Lee said with a devilish smile. Go on, eat. And tell me about seeing Adam. Tell me what everyone said. The more I know, the better I can help you.
Josie sighed and opened the bag. When Chloe heard the knock that evening, she muted the television with the remote and took the book that had appeared beside her and stuffed it under the couch cushions. When she stood, Finding Forgiveness had appeared on the couch again. She stuffed it under the cushions more firmly this time. Books usually gave up after a while when she didn't want to read them, but not this one. Behave, she told it. She walked across the open living room/dining room area. The kitchen at the other end was separated only by an island counter. It was all very clean, masculine, no clutter, just the way Jake liked it. She lost herself in him, in this. She let it happen. She took a deep breath before she opened the door. She knew who it was. Adam had called earlier and said he was coming by. She waved him in.
His suitcases are under the bed.
Adam entered the apartment and waited while she closed the door.
"How are you doing, Chloe?" he asked as he unzipped his jacket.
"I'm great. Let's go to the bedroom and get this over with."
"I can't tell you how many women have said that to me."
Chloe had to smile. Everything about Adam made him seem carefree. His sense of humor, his naturally tan skin, his curly blonde hair. He looked part surfer and part ski bum. And it was true. If there was an extreme outdoor sport, Adam had done it at least once. Up until 3 years ago, that is. After his accident, he said it was time to settle down. No more risks, no more travel for him. But Chloe always sensed he wasn't really happy here. She followed him and watched from the bedroom doorway while he took the suitcases out and began to put Jake's clothes in them. She wished he could pack Jake's smell. She wished there was a way to put it in a bottle and stopper it. It was in the mattress, in the wallpaper, in the couch cushions. It was like a feral mark. This was his space. These were his things. It didn't feel like security as it once had when she first moved in with him. It felt like gloating now, like Jake saying, "Look at all I have. You need this. You need me."
"Josie Cerini asked about you after you left the shop today," Chloe said, because that was neutral territory.
"She thought you and I were a couple. She seemed relieved that we weren't."
Adam stopped packing, giving Chloe the strangest look.
"I take it this is a surprise to you?"
"She's a nice woman, and I deliver her mail, that's all."
"She is nice. And I didn't realize she was so young," Chloe said.
"Come on, I know you've noticed more than her mail." "She smells like peppermint," he said, after giving it some thought.
"You have noticed." But he didn't say anything else. It wasn't like their usual banter when she would tease him about dating more. He disappeared into the attached bathroom, and she crossed her arms over her chest and looked down at her feet.
"I'm going to lose you, aren't I?" she said when he came out of the bathroom with Jake's toiletries. She liked Adam, but he was friends with Jake first. Jake had met him at the gym. Adam hadn't been in Bald Slope for very long at the time. It had only been a few months since his accident on Bald Slope Mountain, and Jake invited him to have drinks with him and Chloe. Everything around her had been Jake's first. The apartment was Jake's, a stylish red brick place in the historic renovated firehouse downtown. It had been a gift to him from his parents when he graduated from law school. She had some furniture left from her great-grandparents' house, along with hundreds of boxes of books that had appeared over the years, in a small storage rental. She'd never asked to put her things here. She didn't know why now. She guessed she didn't think they would fit, and she had wanted to fit in Jake's life, wanted it so much she got lost in it. Adam walked over to her and put his hands on her arms. He had to bend a little to make sure he met her eyes. "You're not losing anyone, least of all me." It was a one-time thing, 3 months ago. He was stupid. People do stupid things. I mean, you don't do stupid things. Asking him to leave wasn't stupid. I'm not saying that. She smiled at him again.
"Adam?"
"Yes?"
"You're really bad at this."
He seemed relieved that she'd called him on it.
"I know."
He dropped his hands from her arms.
"I guess I should be going."
He went back to the bed and zipped up the suitcases. Then he noticed a book on the nightstand.
"Is this your book?"
he asked as he picked it up. She looked over at it, expecting it to be that damn book that had been following her all day. But no, this was a new book. Old Love, New Direction. "This is good, Chloe." He held the book in the palm of his hand like a scale, as if the words had weight. "It's good that you have this." Confused, Chloe leaned out of the room and looked over to Finding Forgiveness, back on top of the couch cushions in the living room. Good Lord, it had called in reinforcements.
"I should go," Adam said, putting the book down.
He slid the suitcases off the bed, and she followed him to the front door.
"Do you want me to tell Jake anything?"
She opened the door for him.
"That I look happy?"
"Chloe."
"No, I don't want you to tell him anything."
"Good night, Adam," she said, and closed the door behind him. She whirled around. Old Love, New Direction had joined Finding Forgiveness on the couch, like they were waiting to have a talk with her. Great. She was being stalked by self-help books. She stomped to the bathroom to take a shower. Books never appeared in the bathroom. Like cats, they hated water. She stood under the spray until the water turned cold. Just when she thought she had washed all thoughts of Jake out of her mind, at least enough to sleep, she opened the bathroom door and found the books, stacked neatly one on top of the other on the floor in front of her.
"If I see you again tonight, I'm putting you both in the toilet," she said, as she stepped over them and went to the bed to set her alarm. When she turned around again, they were gone.
Chapter 4 Snowcaps. The next day at work, Chloe spent her downtime reading magazines from the periodical inventory that had come in that morning. She wanted distractions, any distractions. She wanted to forget about how quiet the apartment was last night, how out of place she felt in it alone. Unfortunately, Finding Forgiveness kept appearing by her on the counter, nudging her, reminding her. At least Old Love, New Direction had decided to stay home, though it had poured out of her box of cereal that morning, clanging onto the bowl and causing Cheerios to fly everywhere. She had just knocked Finding Forgiveness off the counter again when she saw someone crossing the rotunda toward her. She straightened as the woman approached.
"It's you," Chloe said, unreasonably glad to see her again.
Josie Serini stopped and turned around to see who Chloe was talking to. When she saw no one was there, she said,
"Me?"
"Yes, you," Chloe said, laughing.
"Another grilled tomato and cheese to go?"
Josie walked up to the counter. "You remembered?" I remember what everyone orders. I get that from my great-granddad.
Chloe turned and put on a pair of disposable clear plastic gloves. Then she started to assemble the sandwich.
He used to run this shop. He left it to me. I don't get too many orders for grilled tomato and cheese. There was this one woman who always ordered it, but I haven't seen her in a while.
Oh, she heard Josie say, as if that interested her. Chloe shrugged and said,
A pretty woman, older, a little rough, blonde hair and lots of makeup. Every time I saw her, she was coming from court. Domestic disturbance. Every time. Except that one time she was here on solicitation.
Chloe stopped and looked over her shoulder at Josie.
I'm not talking trash. She told me. She told Hank, too.
Chloe nudged her shoulder toward Hank at the security gate in front of the main doors.
She wasn't ashamed. That's just the way some people live.
As soon as the bread turned golden and the cheddar and Colby and Jack began to melt and sizzle onto the grill, Chloe scooped the sandwich up with a spatula and wrapped it in wax paper. When she turned, Josie had the money ready. She was dressed that day in a long gray coat, its cloth-covered buttons secured all the way to the top, where a red cardigan peeked out from under the collar. It was something easy to overlook, but she was really very pretty. She had beautiful pale skin, which was a stark contrast to her dark eyes and hair, like black marble and snow. It was very dramatic, like she would be cool to the touch. But she smelled sweet, like candy. No, that wasn't it, Chloe thought. She smelled like Christmas.
Adam's right, Chloe said as she set the bag on the counter in front of Josie. You smell like peppermint.
Adam said I smelled like peppermint, Josie said, her voice pitching slightly.
Uh-huh, last night when I talked to him.
Is that good or bad?
I'd say it was good, Chloe said, trying not to smile at how nervous that seemed to make Josie. It was sweet. She and Jake had never had that fluttery infatuation, that nervous, does-he-like-me feeling. From the beginning, it had been like a cannonball, all that passion. There had never been time for a traditional courtship.
She took the money from Josie and rang up the purchase, just as the elevator farthest from them opened and a wave of suits poured out. Court had recessed. Chloe looked up and found him right away. It was as if thoughts of him had made him appear. Jake's shoe was untied, and he hadn't noticed. He had papers sticking out of his briefcase, which someone had just pointed out to him. He looked embarrassed. He didn't know how to handle this any better than she did, which was a strange thing to take comfort in. Jake began to walk toward her shop. He had dark hair that, compared to Josie's black hair, was warm chocolate cake brown. His eyes were light green, a striking shade she could make out even from across the rotunda. He was so intense. Did the other woman see that in him, too? Had he focused on her like he was focusing on Chloe right now? Had she been helpless to resist? A single hard impulse hit her, and she wanted to go to him. She wanted to leave Josie and the shop and everything else behind and run into his arms. He'd hug her, and they would kiss, and the water in the coffee maker would start to boil, and everything would go back to the way it was. Everything would fit in the too tight way it did before, but that would be all right. Wasn't that better than her life falling off of her altogether? But she stopped herself. That wouldn't make it right. You didn't forgive because it was the only choice you thought you had. That didn't make it forgiveness. That made it desperation. She'd always been too desperate about Jake. Always. And how could she forgive him when he wouldn't even tell her who he'd slept with?
"Excuse me," she said to Josie, starting to turn to hide in the small storeroom. "Are you okay?"
Chloe looked at him again. He was getting closer.
"I'm just trying to avoid someone."
Josie turned to see who it was.
"Jake Yardley? You know him?"
"Sort of," Josie said, turning back around. Chloe wasn't surprised.
As prosecutor, Jake had been on the local television news almost every night for the duration of the Beasley murder trial in Bald Slope this past summer. Murder in a small town is pervasive, growing like kudzu until it envelops everyone in its sensationalism. People would still come up to Jake on the street to talk about the case, wanting to know what went on behind the scenes at the trial, wanting assurances that Wade Beasley was behind bars for good. "He cheated on me," she said, and it was the first time she'd said it out loud. "Oh," Josie said. Chloe hurried into the storeroom. After she'd dropped out of college when her great-grandparents fell ill, she'd had to sell the farmhouse and put them in a nursing home. She'd had nowhere to live, so she'd secretly moved into this storeroom and lived in it for almost 6 months. Every bit of money she'd made during that time went toward her great-grandparents' care. Hank was the only one to find out, and he let her get away with it. Her great-grandparents died within months of each other. Just weeks after her great-grandmother's death, she met Jake, and she clung to him. She'd lost almost everything, and there he was, offering her so much. "Chloe, please come out here," she heard him call. "I don't think she wants to." Chloe cocked her head. That was Josie's voice. "Chloe, if you don't come here, I'm coming back there." He was ignoring Josie. She steeled herself for his presence. He could make her forget that it was desperation. He could make her forget everything. And this small room couldn't contain what they had when they were together. The temperature would rise, ice would melt, eggs would fry in their cartons. After it had happened a few times when they first met, she had insisted he stay away from her at work because she lost inventory when he was around. A few moments passed. "All right, here I come," he said. "No," Josie said, "you're not going back there." "Who are you?" Jake demanded in his lawyer voice, which made Chloe feel anxious for Josie. Josie was no match for him in lawyer mode. But to Chloe's surprise, she heard Josie say with some exasperation, "I'm Josie Serini, Jake. I stole your piece of chocolate cake at your grandmother's Christmas party when I was 6 and made you cry."
"Josie," Jake said, as if his memory had suddenly kicked in. "Where's your mother? What are you doing here?"
"I'm helping out a friend."
"I know all of Chloe's friends."
"Maybe you only thought you did," Josie said. A few moments of silence passed before Chloe heard, "He's gone."
She walked out sheepishly. She should be handling this better.
"Thank you," Chloe said.
"I hope I didn't..."
Josie waved an arm in the direction Jake had obviously left. The movement revealed the watch on her wrist. When she looked at it, she said, "Oh, no, I have to go."
"I'll walk you out," Chloe said, falling into step with Josie as she grabbed the sandwich bag and hurried into the rotunda.
They reached the doors and walked out into the cool afternoon. The park in front of the courthouse was a flurry of last-minute activity before the kickoff to the Bald is Beautiful festival that night. Leaves skittered across the grass on the breeze created as the canopies went up. The clouds were low in the sky, bright gray and full of sparkles.
"Wait," Chloe said once they reached the courthouse steps, a little out of breath. Josie could really move.
"Are you going to the festival tonight?"
Josie looked out over the park warily.
"No. Are you?"
"I usually do. I mean, I always went with Jake."
"I'll go if you go."
She met Josie's eyes. They were about the same height, and their eyes were the same shade of dark brown.
"Surely there are other people you'd rather go with."
"They'd all grill me about Jake.
I get the feeling you wouldn't."
"It's none of my business."
"See? You're perfect."
Josie gave a small laugh and shook her head.
"I haven't been since I was little," she said.
She looked down, confusion coming to her face. She bent and picked up a book that was lying on the steps.
"Isn't this your book?"
Chloe sighed.
"Oh, thanks."
Didn't you just leave it on the counter?
Yes, I think I will go tonight. I didn't do anything without him. That's going to change. I'm going to do this.
Josie's eyes went from the book to Chloe's face.
Do you think you'll forgive him?
I don't know what I'm going to do yet.
She took a few steps over to a large green trash receptacle and threw Finding Forgiveness away.
Listen, I'll be at the stage around 8 o'clock if you change your mind and want to come tonight.
Here. Eat this, quick, Josie said, as she opened her closet door.
She put the bag in front of Della Lee, who was sitting on the floor on the sleeping bag. She was still wearing the tiara and all the necklaces, but today she was wearing several of her shirts layered over her T-shirt, and it looked like she'd put a pair of jeans on over the pair she was already wearing. Josie wasn't quite sure what Della Lee was doing. Maybe she was bored. Maybe she thought the only way she could take her things with her was if she was wearing everything. Not that she was making any noise about leaving. And considering what she had to go back to, that was probably a good thing. In fact, Della Lee seemed perfectly at home here, with no desire to even stand or walk around, at least during the day when Josie could see her. Josie, of all people, understood the appeal of living in there. If Della Lee wasn't in the closet, Josie would crawl in there right now. She would eat raspberry caramels and chocolate-covered cherries and read a romance novel. Josie took off her long gray coat, then slipped out of her lucky red sweater. Was today really lucky? She didn't know how to feel exactly. Things were changing, in tiny ways, but enough to throw her off her normal course. First there was Della Lee, then Chloe, and then Adam said she smelled like peppermint. He'd smelled her.
"Why eat it quick?" Della Lee asked.
Josie walked over to the blue tufted chaise lounge and set her purse, sweater, and coat on it.
"I wanted you to eat it warm, so I put it in my purse when I brought in the groceries. But I think my mother smelled it on me."
She turned around, trying to smooth the sides of her wind-blown hair.
"So what?" Della Lee said.
"So I don't want her to find it here. I was late coming home. She was worried. And if on top of that she thinks I'm sneaking food in here, well, it would embarrass her. And I think I've embarrassed her enough as it is."
The truth was, she sneaked food in all the time. There was just never anyone else involved. She bought a lot of things at the grocery store every week. Extra things on her own debit card so her mother wouldn't find out. There were coconut drops, pixie sticks, and several pretty bottles of orangeade in the trunk right now. She kept the things in the car trunk until her mother went to sleep at night. Then she'd sneak them in. Helena knew about Josie going out to the car at night, but she seemed to think it was normal behavior, and after a while she stopped offering to help her carry the things in. She only stuck her head out of the bedroom to make sure it was Josie and not some ghostly midnight mover.
"What have you done to embarrass her?" Della Lee asked. "It seems to me that you've given up all semblance of a normal life just for her."
Josie shook her head.
"I was a terrible child."
"So what?" Della Lee said again.
"So I owe her this. And she's my family, my only family."
Della Lee laughed.
"That you know of."
"What is that supposed to mean?"
"Joke. It was a joke."
She shook her head.
"You need to stop this hero worship of your mother. She's not that great. And she doesn't give a flying fig about you. You did the same thing with your father."
"How do you know that?"
"The whole town knows that. You adored your father."
"Imagine that. I loved my father. I probably need therapy."
"Thank you for the sandwich, but I already ate."
"Here."
Della Lee set the bag outside the closet.
"You eat it."
Josie stared at the bag. Eating that sandwich would make her feel better. And it would make her feel worse. It was a familiar dilemma. She'd never experienced anything that was simply and entirely good for her. She wondered if such a thing even existed. She sighed and walked over to Della Lee. She sat on the floor in front of the closet and opened the bag.
I talked with Chloe today. She remembered you, not by name, but that you always ordered this.
She unwrapped the sandwich.
She said you were always coming from court.
Domestic disturbance and solicitation.
She took a bite, not looking at Della Lee.
It was always easier after that first bite. No turning back. She had to eat the whole thing now.
And I'm sure that rankled your prim sensibilities.
I don't have prim sensibilities. She finally looked up from the sandwich.
Were you really a prostitute?
I did it to make Julian jealous. Well, sometimes I would do it for the money, too.
At one point, it was even easy.
You'd be surprised how easy some things can be. Things you never thought you'd do when you take self-respect out of the equation.
Della Lee smiled and waved her hand dismissively when she saw the look on Josie's face.
Never mind. So, Chloe remembered me. That's nice. I wasn't sure she would.
She asked me to go to the Bald is Beautiful Festival tonight.
That's great. I knew the two of you would hit it off.
Josie shook her head and took another bite of the sandwich.
I can't go.
Why not?
Wear that sweater you like so much, the one you just took off. It looks good on you. Go and see what happens.
Josie lowered the sandwich.
You think the sweater looks good on me?
You know you want to go, she said seductively, leaning forward so that her hair fell over her shoulder, stirring the air with the scent of river water.
Go, then come tell me everything. I'm forming a plan for you.
Della Lee, you're living in my closet, you're blackmailing me over candy, and you are currently wearing 16 articles of clothing. It's amazing to me that you think I have problems. You need to form a plan for yourself.
Della Lee shook her head. I gave up on me a long time ago. There's still some hope for you, though.
Josie approached the stage. She was too late for the bald head contest, and a band was now setting up. There were lots of college-aged kids milling around in groups, laughing, holding plastic cups of beer, waiting for the music. She spotted Chloe by her hair, a blaze of red shining in the stage lights, like spun cinnamon sugar. She stood near the Bald Slope Ski Resort booth to the right of the stage. The people in the booth were handing out free lift tickets, free CD cases, and free skull caps with the resort's logo on them. Josie made a beeline for her. She knew people weren't really looking at her. It only felt that way because Della Lee had insisted she wear her hair down, and she was wearing some of Della Lee's makeup.
Makeup. She couldn't believe it.
She used to experiment in her room with tubes of lipstick and bottles of rosewater blush she'd sneak out of her mother's vanity when she was a child, trying to imitate her mother's beauty. But she'd never worn makeup in public before. Her mother always said that with Josie's coloring, it would only make her look cheap. And Serini's were in no way cheap. That's why Josie had decided not to tell her mother she was going out tonight. It's why she'd waited until her mother had taken her pill and was fast asleep. It wasn't really such a big deal. Her mother might not have even